You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, it's HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. This is HR Happy Hour 242, being recorded live at the Health and Benefits Leadership Conference at the beautiful Aria Casino and Resort in Las Vegas. This is one of my favorite places in Las Vegas, although I have a lot of Las Vegas favorite places, quite honestly. And when people offer me the opportunity to come to Vegas, it's not a matter of how quickly I say yes, it's can I leave right now? I love Las Vegas. I don't know if that makes me a rarity or not, but I guess it's good, considering I'm here a lot, that I love it so much. But we're going to talk about health and benefits today. This is a great conference. It's the fourth annual Health and Benefits Leadership Conference. We have a great crowd out here. We had a super opening keynote today that I actually wrote about already on the blog. If folks are interested, can check that out, from Alexandra Drain, which is all about sort of the more fundamental issues around health, wellness, and well-being that many organizations are kind of missing. So I'd encourage you to check out the blog today and connect with Alexandra Drain. She's A Drain on Twitter, A-D-R-A-N-A. She was great this morning. But let's get right to it. I've got a really cool guest with me, a guy I've known for a while. I met at the Health and Benefits Conference probably 2 years ago when he was a presenter here. I have Nate Randall here. He is the founder and president of Ursa Major. I'll just let him tell us a little bit more about who he is and what he does. Nate, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so it's been a great experience for me over the years coming to this place as well. And like you, I love the Aria and I love the resort. But also just the content of this conference is amazing. So yeah, for me, you know, I founded Ursa Major some months ago with the idea that we could do things differently for benefits providers, for benefits consultants, for startups trying to get into the benefits space, for benefits administrators and directors. So we consult on all sorts of things, benefits related, healthcare related, that world. Prior to Ursa Major, I know you know, but I was with Tesla Motors for 4 years,
right,
a little startup car company out of
California. Yeah, you might have heard of them.
Might have heard of those guys, and we scaled that company from 900 employees to 13,000 over a four-year period.
Wow.
So I've seen a lot, I've done a lot, I've had a lot of great experiences there, and other places before that. I had the privilege to work at Safeway and on the Safeway Health projects and health reform, all sorts of wonderful things. So happy to be here and happy to explore.
Yeah, Nate, great to have you here. That's right. I do recall your time at Tesla. I believe that's how we met. You were still there. And that's such an interesting, that's another whole story probably
Absolutely.
In itself, right, that we could talk about sometime. But the interesting thing is not so much, it's exciting, it's sexy, it's electric cars, and it is all of those things.
Yeah.
But the scaling, to me, is the really interesting thing.
Yeah.
Like any company growing that quickly, competing for talent in tough markets, and the importance of benefits, wellness, well-being, the overall sort of proposition you're making to employees, that's got to be one of the most exciting times for you and the folks you work with at Tesla, scaling that company.
Absolutely. I mean, it's such a great advantage to be able to have thousands of new employees come into an organization, especially one that has such an innovative mindset as Tesla. I mean, we got the opportunity to build things from scratch, and a lot of benefits people and HR departments don't get that opportunity. So we just, really took advantage of that and worked it from there. But yeah, the scaling was pretty unbelievable. I think the other thing about Tesla that a lot of folks don't necessarily realize or think about is it's a real company underneath, right? They're building a real product. It's a very cool product, and it's a very slick and sexy design and all of those sorts of things. But underneath, you're trying to build a car, and you have manufacturing, and you have sales, and you have service.
A supply chain, and inventory.
And the whole thing. And so a lot of the same problems that a Tesla has, any manufacturing company or goods company in the Midwest has as well.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. I don't want to spend this whole conversation talking about Tesla. It's an interesting story for sure. But I like the fact that I was just reading something really interesting about kind of the relationship between market capitalization and inventory levels, that in the history of measuring these things, that ratio has never been more out of whack, mainly because, for lack of a better example, the one that comes immediately to my mind is Facebook.
Right.
There's no inventory, right? Yeah. Other than some buildings and some land and whatever, some computers. Yeah. But that's not really even inventory anyway. That's some capital. And that's never been more out of whack, right? The relationship between market capitalization and actual things. With Tesla, obviously completely different, right?
Yeah.
As you said, you're building all these cars, they're building that huge factory out in the desert, right, to do batteries, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a completely different model. But in many ways, a more traditional model, of American or, manufacturing.
Yeah, exactly. So. Traditional, yet doing it better than the traditional folks do it.
So great. I mean, that's obviously great background, great kind of preparation for what you're doing now. I love Nate. Again, this is HR Happy Hour Show. I'm with Nate Randall, founder and president of Ursa Major. Nate, tell us a little about what you're doing now, post-Tesla, the companies you're working with now.
So what I've found is just a lot of the experiences that I've had in the past and a lot of the things that we've worked through as teams, collectively, we at all of the companies in this country are very relative across platforms, and people are starting to try to solve some of these problems. So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
The first one is global benefits. Global benefits is something that many companies are talking about today, and they're trying to get their hands around what benefits do we have in which countries, who's going to govern the benefits, all sorts of different issues. And this is one of the trends that I see, and it's not going away anytime soon. We scale from two countries, and then we're going to blow up to 10 more, and then we're going to do whatever we're going to do. Somebody has to figure out how you're going to do that and how it aligns back to the vision and mission of the company.
Yeah, and I imagine compliance is probably a challenge as well, because if you're an organization, say a U.S.-based organization that is embarking on these kinds of aggressive expansion plans, I don't know. It seems to me like most benefits professionals or HR professionals here in the U.S. who maybe work their whole career in the U.S. wouldn't necessarily be too keen on the benefits requirements and compliance issues in a place like Germany or a place like France
Absolutely.
Or a place like the Philippines.
Absolutely. And in many cases, especially in the European nations, you're looking at highly regulated, very specific requirements for how you deliver benefits. And significant costs too, because you have social structures there that are very supportive from healthcare to retirement, and the employer has to pay for that. They have to pay into these systems. So absolutely, the compliance thing is probably the number one thing that you initially run into is, some manager calls you and says, hey, we hired a person in Portugal. And you go, wait, we don't even know if you're allowed to do that yet.
Yeah, right.
Right? So getting your hands around what the specifics are in each country, do you need to register with a local union for the type of product that you're selling in that country? I mean, it gets very complex. So that's definitely one problem is figuring out, are you compliant? Or if you're going into a country, what do you need to do to be compliant?
What are the kinds of approaches, resources, or partners, Nate, that a company could look to for help in these situations? Let's say I'm that person. I'm that HR manager who's just found out, hey, we've just on a rogue basis hired someone in Portugal. Who might I turn to for help?
Right. So that's one of the complex problems. I mean, traditionally, the big three consulting firms have global operations. They've patched together some pretty good networks. Sometimes it's their employees, sometimes it's patched together broker network or something like this. Some of the issue that we run into, though, is many companies, especially a high growth company or a company that's going into a country or many countries, they're going in with 10 people.
Right.
Right. And your big consulting firms aren't really interested in helping you with 10 people, right?
10,000?
Okay, come talk to me, right?
Right?
So it's a very specialized sort of a thing. You get into where you have to either have a resource locally in the States, somebody, like a Ursa Major or another independent consulting firm who's willing to go in and do the groundwork for you.
Okay.
Or you go directly into those countries and you find a local brokerage firm in Spain that is willing to help you out. And that's sort of one of the areas. The other piece of this is not only providing benefits and making sure they're compliant, but also how do you deliver it in a way that's consistent with your company and your culture and the experience that all your employees feel.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, you would think there would be an answer out there, a Facebook of benefits administration for global platforms.
Right.
Unfortunately,
right.
There isn't. You know, so it's again, you're getting partners. There's a great company called Thompson's Online.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Thompson's.
And, yeah,
sure.
And yeah. They do some great stuff from the administration standpoint and allow you to have that consistent look and feel across many countries. The advantage, and one of the things I like about that approach, is you don't necessarily have to tie your brokerage to them. You
okay.
can have this upfront experience and make it consistent. But then stepping back from that, even your written communications,
right.
How do you translate? I'll give you a great example. How do you translate one of your policies to something that maybe is culturally a little bit strange? So at Tesla, you know, one of the things is we wanted to encourage people to get off of gasoline cars.
Right, sure.
That makes sense.
That does make sense for
in
Tesla.
In the Netherlands, it's very common for the company to reimburse you for every mile that you drive to work.
Okay.
Right? So are we going to reimburse our employees for taking their gas-powered cars to work?
Right. A behavior that we're kind of trying to
condition people to move from. Right. So you get into these situations that just working in our box in the United States, you wouldn't necessarily be able to call that out as an issue.
Yeah.
And it's very important to keep things aligned and keep your message clear about what the company is doing, what your culture is.
Yeah, Nate, I think those are super points. And the cultural aspect of it also intrigues me. I was thinking about that before you said it, which is curious. But we hear things at a conference like this and other events about the importance of organizational culture, the delivery of HR and benefit services aligned with the organizational culture. But I can't think of many other areas, maybe no other area where the unique and local issues, regulations, compliance, expectations are more profoundly impact your ability to do that than in the benefit space. It seems like
absolutely,
completely.
And just some of the cultural norms.
Even like paid time off, a benefit, quote unquote, like that.
Yep.
Is treated remarkably differently.
Remarkably different. Even the employment contract, right? And I'm not talking the written contract, but the understood contract. Like in Japan, it's very common for somebody to think that they will work for your company for pretty much their whole life. It's becoming less so, but that's very different than our generations here where 2 years and you're out and you're moving around and
yeah.
you might boomerang and come back. So it's just, it can be very complex. And I think that, you know, the one thing that I always try to do and that I would advise others to do to the extent you're able to is go as slowly as possible
okay.
and really try to understand all of the permutations of what you're looking at.
Yeah. Nate, we had a lot of things we wanted to talk about on the show. We try to boil down the list to just a few to cover it. Let's come back from sort of this global perspective and talk about something that I think is a pretty profoundly U.S. experience right now. You wanted to talk a little bit about what's happening in the area of private exchanges. So you
right.
thought you're feeling that organizations you're working with are encountering this a lot and thinking about it a lot. I'd love for you to talk a little bit, expand about that on that a little bit. But first, just for the dummies listening, I mean me, not you out there, listeners. You're not dummies. I am, but. Just give me like 90 seconds or however long it takes on what is the private exchange? What is
sure.
that?
Sure. So I would say let's not even necessarily call it a private exchange, because I think a lot of the solutions that are coming out now are even beyond private exchanges. It's like private exchanges 2.0 on steroids, whatever you want to say. I would say let's talk about it as a flexible benefits offering.
Okay.
So the concept here would just be for your benefits, healthcare, dental, whatever it is, giving employees choice and access to a marketplace where they can buy what they want to buy. Right. So think of it like Amazon, right? Amazon,
right.
You go in to look for books. There's 10,000 books in Amazon, probably a lot more than that.
Yeah, right.
But it boils it down and I don't have to look through all of them. It tells me here's the 10 that are suggested for you. So it's the same type of concept, saying rather than your employer giving you two or three choices of health plans, for example, you would go in there and you would have a choice of all sorts of different designs, all sorts of different carriers. And it's really up to you to choose the brand and the price point and the features that you want.
Now, there are a couple follow-ups on this, Nate. From an employee perspective, this sounds like win-win to me. Just from that short description, it sounds like I've got more choices, more options, more flexibility to get something that's much more aligned with me personally.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
I think it's fair to say, and the reason I would say that is just personal experience. That's what I've heard.
Okay.
Right? It's not my opinion. It's what hundreds and hundreds of employees have told me. So I have the experience of moving a company to a private exchange. intimately, okay. Right? And employees love it. It's a shopping experience. You're giving them the cash that otherwise you were telling them they had to spend on something.
Right.
Now you're giving them the cash and they're making the choice and they feel good about it. They're buying something that they find value in, that they think fits their family okay. and their budget. So it's definitely a great experience from that perspective, which is counter to some of the dark cloud that hangs over exchanges, public and private.
Right, right. Now, let's flip it to the employer side, the employer right. perspective. Now, from an employer's perspective, why might an employer... Oh, wait, let me step back. Who might be the right kind of, a right profile of an employer where this kind of a solution makes sense? And then what are some of the benefits that might accrue to the employer for right. utilizing the private right. exchange model?
Sure, that's a great question. So one of the ways I look at it is that it's really hard to tell who it might work for
okay.
until you get in there and you look at all the options. There are probably close to 100 private exchanges at this point when you count them all. It's pretty crazy. Now, for any given employer, you can divide those up by employer size to figure out
right.
Which one might work for me. So let's say we boil it down to 20 private exchanges that might work for the employer. The focus shouldn't be necessarily on what their benefits might be or what they might get out of it until you've gone through the whole analysis. So I always like to say, wouldn't you like to have the hip pocket information to at least understand
mm-hmm.
If this is something that might work for your population, might work for your finances, might work for your CFO? And if it doesn't, then it doesn't. But
right.
For me, I think it's important in this sort of market to understand all the options that are out there. And it's not that hard to, cull through and figure it out. So some of the benefits that could occur for the employer mm-hmm. would be maybe a little bit of savings. It really depends on the employer's philosophy, though. Many
okay.
that I've talked to and worked through this type of a process with, they don't want to save money. They're like, we would like to spend the same amount of money on benefits that we do today. We don't want to be seen as
cutting benefits,
money or
right?
cutting
that's
benefits.
Bad PR all the way around.
Right, exactly. Right. And what it really does is it frees up money so that employees can go and spend those money more effectively.
Right.
So that's one of the benefits for the employer. I think the other part of it is cost control. So we'll see if this plays out over time, some of the fully insured
okay.
models. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, whether it has cost increases or not. But you're effectively saying, I'm going to give you $10,000 to go buy your benefits
okay.
this year, whatever the number is. Next year, you can decide if there's a cost of living wage increase on that $10,000
right.
or if you're going to stay with $10,000 or go down. Whereas with your many other models, you're beholden to the insurance rate increases. So those are some of the,
mm-hmm.
the benefits.
Okay.
I would say the biggest benefit, though, in my experience, didn't have anything to do with financial, doesn't have anything to do with cost control. It really has to do with an employee experience that's very positive. You're letting people make their own choice about their benefits decisions. And the future of exchanges, this is the reason I think private exchange is kind of a bad word,
okay.
is very interesting. So when you start to think about, we've let people choose their medical, dental, and vision insurance.
Right.
Right? And they get to choose from all these great choices. What if we let them choose how they spend some of that money on other items? They want to buy a gym membership.
Okay.
They want to buy a bike. Something that really matters to them, and they can make the trade-off in how they spend their money. What if you throw in some of the funds you give them for retirement accounts? Maybe for a young person, they would like to funnel a bunch of their healthcare money, buy a super cheap health plan, and funnel that towards retirement
right.
accounts.
Which for a young person might make a lot of sense
right.
based
and
on
then,
risk profiles and many other
and
things.
And then as you're close to retirement, you go the opposite route. You buy a very rich health plan. So you start to think about the future of this and where this could go. I mean, it's endless. It could become a really great marketplace and I would say distribution channel for all these great vendors you see out here at the
right.
conference.
Yeah. Nate, last question on this, I think, topic is, again, if I'm an HR pro, I'm a benefits pro, thinking about this a little bit, wanting to learn more, is there a place I can go? Or, like, where are my best sources, in your estimation, for just
yeah.
learning more about what this is all about and how I might
yeah.
leverage it in my organization?
So I think one is start with your consulting firm. Whoever you use for consulting, one of the big three or somebody else, they should have information for you. I think one of the gaps we have here is that in many of the consulting firms, firms and many of the larger firms, they're also selling the product.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, we didn't really name names in this, but I imagine some of them are playing both sides of this.
They are, right? and they'll tell you they have a firewall, but I would say just, you know, sort of take everything with a grain of salt. But you can definitely get a great education starting there. How does your exchange work? How does what's the pricing? You know, that they're going to be super happy to tell you how much it'll cost you. So, you know, you can get them to do a lot of analysis on the front end. And then beyond that, there are, you know, a handful of firms out there. I know PwC and some of the other firms are coming into this and trying to be a little bit independent so they can look at all the options out there and be independent. Firms like mine or other small firms that don't sell in exchange really can provide that sort of independent
place. Right, that third-party kind of neutral, if you will, right, view of the market and the issues.
And, you know, whether or not you go to an exchange also. So you can go look at 10 of them, and you might look at the whole thing and say, you know, we did our due diligence here, and it's not the right fit for us. Yeah. And that's okay, too.
Nate, that makes great sense. Quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. From Las Vegas, from the ARIA at the Health and Benefits Leadership Conference. My name's Steve Oaks. Trish not with us today, by the way. Trish is out at her own event. We miss Trish, of course. I think hopefully, as we speak, recording her own HR Happy Hour show with some folks today. She's out at the Elevated Careers by eHarmony. You know eHarmony?
Oh, yeah,
nice. They're launching their own sort of careers and talent matching kind of thing. It's happening this week, and that's where Trish is. But, I mean, that's kind of a clever idea, too, right? We've seen a lot of this in the recruiting space, the whole Tinder model for recruiting. Yeah. There's a lot of companies chasing that. And so I'm interested to hear from her about what she's learned and what's happened out there this week. But this is a great event. I love this event. I learned a lot myself at this event. I just learned a lot about private exchanges in the last 7 minutes.
Well, there you go.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Nate.
Take me to dinner and we can learn a lot more.
I'm going to tell you what. We might have to. There was one more topic you brought up when we were talking about what are some of the really big issues. And I'm so glad you suggested this one. It's financial wellness. And I'm glad you mentioned it for a couple of reasons. One is we actually did a show, HR Happy Hour show, about 2 months ago, maybe towards the end of last year, on financial wellness with one of the startup companies who's providing technological solutions in this space. It was a really interesting show. But also, the keynote this morning, I mentioned Alexander Drain at the top of the show. She talked about financial wellness, among other things, this morning as well. This is definitely becoming a big issue. I hear about it way more now than I ever did before. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your perspectives on this issue as it relates to, you know, employer benefit offerings.
Yeah, well, financial wellness is definitely the new black this year, right? It's the soup du jour. So I think a couple of opinions that I have about this. So one, it feels to me like it's going to go the way of health wellness.
Okay.
In that we're trying to solve some problems very quickly that are difficult problems, and they're going to take a long time to solve. It's going to take more than focusing on it for 2016 in order for us to solve this problem. But really, the way I look at it is, you know, if you go back to the individual employee, and a lot like the keynote this morning was saying, the individual employee, you can't ask them to do 10,000 steps or to go to the gym 3 times a week if they're extremely concerned and torn up about whether or not they're going to have enough money to send their kid to college.
Right.
Or whether or not they have just some basics, like my car broke and I don't have $1,000 to get it fixed to get to work.
Right.
So financial wellness really needs to come in and meet people where they're at. Unfortunately, what I'm seeing so far, and many of your listeners probably can relate to this, is there's not a great one-size-fits-all financial wellness guru platform that fixes everything. It's very complex. It's very distributed. We're seeing a lot of movement in the big providers out there who maybe provide retirement services today, starting to repackage and rename products to be financial.
I think I've seen a couple of those out on the expo floor today.
Yeah,
I won't either because I don't know enough about them to start naming names. But I think you're right on that. Yeah.
So I think the interesting thing will be here, and the trend will be here, is to see how this merges in for me with health and wellness, with your insurances, with your entire benefits package, to really create something that's not sort of an exciting thing for the year, but it's just organically the way benefits work is they meet you where you're at. And if it's a financial thing or a health thing or whatever it is, whatever top of mind thing is, your company's helping you get through that and really creating that great relationship.
Yeah, I think, Nate, that's a super point. I think on the financial wellness side, too, it's there's some couple things I'm thinking about here. One is it's certainly relative, right? Yeah. Even in your give a couple of great examples. One example might be, boy, I've got two kids. You know, they're bright kids. I'm trying to get them into college. That's presenting me with some financial challenges and issues and concerns. That's one sort of set of problems. And then there's sort of middle-level problems like, boy, I'd really like to get a new car, but I can't. I've got this old terrible car. And then there's sort of really fundamental and basic problems. But I've got to make rent. You know, I've got to buy food. I've got to make sure these really basic things are covered. And that's a whole other set of problems. So you're right. Like, you can't apply one approach or even a couple of approaches to attack those gamut of issues.
And, you know, there's some exciting companies that are here. So there's a company called HixMe, H-I-X-M-E. It's kind of an interesting name. But they've started looking at, much like the presentation this morning, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? So if your basic security and safety is not met, you're certainly not thinking about self-actualization.
I was tweeting about this morning, right? If you don't have a job, you're not really going to get too motivated to focus on reducing your risk factors for diabetes. Those are two separate conversations.
And so these guys are thinking through, you know, how do we create platforms and distribution channels and a way of delivering benefits that really fills in the bottom part of that triangle and really gets people up the rung so that at some point you can get to all of those great things about feeling valued and feeling pride in your work and getting the kids off to college and watching them get married and all those sorts of things, which you can't do today if you're worried about making rent and those. So to me, financial wellness is a slice of up and down that vertical that applies at all stages. Right, all the way from retiring successfully in the Bahamas to I have to make rent this week, right? And there has to be solutions all along that spectrum that are true solutions, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring that up is there are some out there that aren't really solutions. They're a way for companies to make money.
Right.
And we're talking here about solutions for helping people plan for financial success.
Yeah, Nate, that's a super point. I think the other kind of thing I thought about, you know, when I hear the conversations around financial wellness and I just think about it, maybe this is just me being naive because this is just me thinking. Like, I wonder if organizations can potentially fall into a trap, especially in large organizations distributed, have a lot of, lower to mid-skilled jobs that are paying lower to mid-level wages that you know, you're coming at me, you know, Mr. Employer, with this financial wellness program, and in my visceral reaction is, well, you know, how my financial wellness could be improved? You could pay me more,
right?
Like I mean, that's got to be potentially a conversation that could happen, right?
Absolutely, that, and then also, I mean, the average American, let's face it, if you do a true financial plan for them, it's going to tell them they're never going to be able to retire.
Oh, I know. Those sort of things are frightening as hell.
Right? So who's going to do that? So I think that's one of the things that I'm really looking forward to with this focus on it, is not the quick repackaging of existing stuff that's already out there and slapping a new label on it, but the people who are working on very smart ways to think through how we get people engaged in their finances. Because let's face it, it's extremely boring, right? For many people. Some people like counting their pennies, but for many people, it's boring. It's a negative experience because it's going to tell you you don't have enough pennies.
Right.
And then...
there are very few of us who are going to do that exercise and have it come back and say, hey, you're all set.
And then the third thing is just that it doesn't pay off today or tomorrow. It pays off ways in the future, right? If I decide to get healthy and I eat well today and I go to the gym, I feel good, right? Yeah. If I save $10 towards my retirement, not so much. I mean, it's so that's going to be very interesting to watch how people innovate in this space, how some of the new startups coming out of, you know, Silicon Valley and other areas are going to be able to push this envelope.
Yeah, that Nate, super point. It reminds me of I did a show not too long ago about payroll and software. You know, you think, oh, it's so boring, payroll. But there was something that came up in one of the shows that I thought was a great idea. This idea that, hey, let's use these systems, these HRIS and these payroll systems, to help people achieve financial related goals, but that are in the nearer term. Not right. this retire 40 years from now, hopefully yeah. you have enough money. This was, I do want to get that new car, or yeah. I do want to, you know, save X amount of dollars for some goal that I have, and have yeah. ways to integrate that in with the software that informs you about your Absolutely. Pay and help you reach those goals yep. and maybe divert pay in certain ways. And it was a really clever idea, and I think something that rolls yeah. into this conversation yeah. a little bit.
Absolutely. And one of the points there that you made is valid across all of benefits, you know, the data we have available, mm. the data employees are willing to share with us, or the data that we are able to get, right? And we're one of the only industries out there who doesn't really free that data and use it intelligently. If I think of Google and searching for something, they're using all kinds of data to serve Right. up very intelligent results to me. There's no reason that some of the new companies coming out can't leverage this mountain of data that we're sitting on in very safe and secure ways to create solutions that are highly customized and highly effective.
Yeah. I think you're right on that. I think there's a lot of interesting things that are happening here, but again, it's got to fit into that context, right? And this yeah. is sort of really what we've been talking about around different elements of this, but the real conversation, I think, especially what I heard this morning, we're talking about now, and I think we'll hear in the next couple of days, is this is kind of a big thing. There's a lot of elements to this. There's these fundamental needs that are important, and they're diverse. They're involving financial wellness. They're involving maybe even caregiving. We heard about that this morning. Maybe they're even just personal kind of relationship yeah. things, right? Like some of the statistics that were shared this morning, like if your employees are going through, you know, a divorce, that they're, yeah. you know, 4x times more likely to have increased claims, you know, right. for the next 6 months, but yet no organization really yeah. does anything to try to facilitate giving any help in that, because yeah. I get why. It's difficult, it's touchy, it's very personal, and yeah. maybe people don't want to be helped that way. It's right. maybe another conversation, but
I would say it's because we're not using the data smartly,
yeah.
right? There are so many data points that come through our feeds, you know, somebody having a baby and they add them to benefits. There should be a whole trickle of very intelligent communications and interaction with that employee around that one data point change.
Yeah, that is such a great example, because yeah. you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of how, remember how Target got into trouble?
Yes.
A few years ago, because they were kind of sniffing around their data to try to figure out if someone might be pregnant, I think it was, right? A shopper might yeah. be pregnant, and they yeah. were pushing offers for diapers and other baby-related items, yeah. and there was a bit of an uproar about it. But yeah. the uproar and the clamor obscured the real point, the one that you just made, that, hey, we can do this smartly. Yeah. We should be able to do it smartly, intelligently, respecting people's privacy and the yeah. security and privacy yeah. of their data, but to provide them information, resources, support, and uplift that they need when they need it for the things they need yeah. it for. I yeah. think that's really true.
Absolutely, yeah.
Nate, this has been loads of fun. We probably should wrap it up and get back to the conference. What else? Where should people go to sort of find you, learn more about what you're doing and the things you're interested yeah. in?
Absolutely. So our website is just ursamajor.consulting. Super simple. And actually on there we have some great free resources, because one of the challenges that I always had was there seemed to be 2,500 startups coming out every day.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we've taken an opportunity to probe pretty deep with some startups, and we've created a map that you can find on there. It's called the Innovation in Employee Benefits Ecosystem.
Oh, cool.
And what we've done is sort of started to curate who are really making tracks, who are making progress, who are legitimate, and who we feel have the most interesting solutions. So culling it down from thousands of startups calling you every day to the select few that we really think are super strong.
We may need to bring this story to HR Tech in October. That's another story. That's fascinating as hell. So we'll have to talk about that later. So, okay, ursamajor.consulting, did I get that right?
Yeah.
All right, find Nate there. Nate, on Twitter, ursamajor?
Yeah, Nate is N8, Randall, RANDALL.
All right.
That's on Twitter.
Find Nate on Twitter and
LinkedIn. I'm there too.
We'll get it all out there. Yeah. All these things will be published. And Nate, thanks for taking the time today.
Yeah.
Great to see you.
Thank you. This was great.
Great conversation. Really enjoyed it. And we'll have fun the next day and a half here, or 2 days left at the Benefits Conference. So thanks again, everyone. Thanks again for listening. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. Thanks to Nate Randall from ursamajor. And we will see you next time on the HR Happy Hour Show.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.